If Hussein are just me.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of our podcast, How Nigeria Works
But Doesn't.
I'm Sandra.
I'm Andy.
And yes, I know that the last episode we recorded, you know, about the social media bill, we said we were going to record more frequently, and we didn't quite keep to that promise because of Andy. Andy's a busy man these days, you know, being a product manager, being a venture capital executive, being all kinds of things that he is these days.
Well, I think Sandra took one for the team the last time, so I guess I can take one for the team this time.
Did I take one for the team last time?
Yeah, actually, you denied being responsible, so I guess I also deny. This is not my fault. This is not my fault. And actually, technically, did we lie? We said we'll record more frequently, and if you look at it, the gap between the last recording and this one is not as long as the previous gap, so we are kind of, sort of keeping to our promise.
Exactly. And hey, don't forget, there's a pandemic and everything. Oh,
this is a very Nigerian litany of excuses.
You know, there's like a pandemic and everything. And, you know,
even easier to record.
Excuse me, social distancing.
We've not been socially distancing like that.
Okay, so this is the part where we introduce you to the topic on this episode of our podcast. We're calling it How Able-Bodiedness
Doesn't
Work. Now, everybody's talking about President Muhammad Buhari's comments a few days ago, where he was launching his new development plan. How many development plans have we had now, Andy?
Officially, we've had 5, but we've had way more than that. We've had like about 8 or 9 by my count. Yeah, you know, the first world, the first development plan under the First Republic. Mm-hmm. Then the military regimes had like 4 of them in a row, like, and each one with a new set of targets, which we never meet. Mm-hmm. And then after that, we had like Vision 2000 or whatever it was called, you know, education for all by the year 2000, health for all, you know, we all grew up with that, you know, some of us anyway. And then after that, we now had, you know, Vision 2020, which, well, it's 2020.
Yes, it is. And, it's almost the end of 2020.
Yeah, but like...
Well, nobody saw that there'll be a pandemic in 2020. Perhaps, if the pandemic did not occur in 2020, perhaps we would have met the vision 2020.
Well, that assumes that up until 2019, we were right on course.
Were we not on course for meeting the vision 2020?
And then... Corona struck.
Okay, fine. We were not on course.
No, they were not on course for meeting.
But anyways, we have a new one. This one is supposed to lift 100 million Nigerians out of poverty. How do you feel?
Goals.
How do you feel about this new plan, Andy? Huh?
Well, I love people who aim high.
Ambition is sexy.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And if ambition alone were the only measure of sexiness, then I think the Nigerian government would be the world's most eligible person. You know,
ambition were a horse, beggars would write.
Yes, yes. Because, I mean, the Nigerian government just sets these, like, targets. So, like, we're going to lift 100 million people out of poverty.
They sound nice on paper.
Like, great.
They make great headlines.
I know. And then when you look at it and you realize that, like, say, the last, like... 6 years, we've actually been heading the other direction, where every year we have more and more people going
falling into poverty. Yeah.
We're like one of the world's like top manufacturers of poverty.
When you put it like that,
yeah, I mean, everybody's making something. Everybody's manufacturing something. Everybody's making something.
And you're manufacturing poverty.
Well, aren't we? I mean, and not just regular old poverty, multidimensional poverty.
You know, there's
like,
levels to that.
No, yeah, you know, like, see, yeah, you know, like. You know, like your poverty is in her DMs, but our poverty is like on her TikTok as well. You know, like our poverty is everywhere. Oh, it's not just in the bank account.
Well, except on TikTok in America, where Trump's banned it.
Yeah, I mean, well, our poverty is in our infrastructure. It's in, oh, nobody has amenities. How many goats do you have? And how many cars and vehicles? And how many households have bicycles?
Okay, let me bring Andy back to this new plan where we have an ambitious dream of lifting 100 million Nigerians out of poverty. Now, what's their plan for doing this one? We don't know the details, as is common with most Nigerian plans. But Something the president said struck me. He said, quote, "We have a lot of able-bodied young people willing to work, and agriculture is the answer." So basically, the president thinks agriculture is the answer to Nigeria's employment problem. And think about it, Andy. Able-bodiedness and young people in Nigeria, lots of arable land. What else can we do but put this marriage together and wish for conjugal bliss?
Well, much as I enjoy the whole agriculture as fertility metaphor better than anyone.
Overton.
Well, Sinclair. Yeah, we've been watching a lot of Living Single. I blame the pandemic. But but yeah, but okay. So I guess this is progress in the sense that at the beginning of the president's time in office, in his first term, he called Nigerian youths lazy.
He said,
we have lazy Nigerian youths.
I guess he changed his mind.
Yeah, so I guess in the last, like, you know, 5 years, we've gone from lazy Nigerian youths. Now we are able-bodied.
Able-bodied citizens.
Although you could be able-bodied and lazy.
I mean, there has been a lot of resistance to going back to
the farm. Yeah, people don't want to go to the farm. Yeah, people are like, no, 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 agriculture is not the answer.
I guess we are proving him right that we are
lazy. You know, but...
I think, you know how, you know, when your parent has all these dreams for you, knows your potential, knows what you're capable of.
This speaking suppose they farm.
Yes, because you get able-bodied. See your chest, see your muscle. Hey, chief, see your muscle. Muscular.
I have no muscles. As if... If the if the consequence of having muscles is being sent back to the farm or sent to the farm, I've never been there. I am glad I skipped leg day, hand day, core day, glutes, cardio day,
glutes day.
Yes,
glutes is a butt, right? That's like bum bum. That's the glutes.
Yes, that is the.
You
glutes.
Can tell that neither of us works out.
Yes, yes, but only one of us actually needs it, and you don't. But I. Just,
you
I
have
refused
to be done. You're sexy.
Oh, well, madam. this is a podcast, madam.
Okay. All right. Anyway, Shao, able-bodiedness has become a meme. You have people like Tex the Law tweeting everything and quoting it able-bodiedness. We saw a video of ducks in Thailand the other time that they release into like rice farms to go and eat up all of the weed. And some, and I think it was Tex the Law on Twitter who quoted it and said able-bodiedness. And I died. But you see, videos like that get me thinking about how people who want to do agriculture are very intentional with it. They try, agriculture that works anyway, they try to find ways to make it 360. They try to find ways to have everything else feed off of everything else. Like, they provide like an ecosystem of sorts that allows everything else thrive. We just want to send people into bushes with hoes and cutlasses. And we've been trying to do this for a long, long time. So at what point do we get up and say, okay, you know what? Maybe we hear with Jan Stein, we talk that time where he talks, say, if you keep trying something again and again and again and you're yielding the same results, perhaps, you know, you're insane.
Yeah, but, you know, the last person to know that they're insane is the insane person. You know, and, you know, so I loved the point you made that we keep trying this over and over. When I was 4 years old, in my school, we had a pageant, you know, thing. And it was all about agriculture. Because at the time, the government had a policy called School to Land. And the idea of the policy was for young people finishing school.
Four-year-olds?
Graduate. No, well, no, it wasn't for us. But okay. I guess we're trying to get us to encourage our older siblings to go to the farm. It was like...
I'm trying to imagine you telling your older brother, go to the farm!
Oh, yes. Yeah, you know that. Basically, the whole thing of School to Land in the 80s was for school leavers, like graduates, finishing, you know, secondary school and university and polytechnic and not finding work to go to the farms.
Right.
You know, which, of course, leads you to the question, why did you send them to school in the first place?
Right.
And, okay, all right, let me rephrase that. I don't mean to say that you don't need to go to school to farm. Right. Part of the problem is that we're not educating our farmers enough.
Huh.
But you don't send people to study other things.
Right.
if your ultimate aim is to get them to the farm,
right.
then teach them farming in school. Don't teach them, you know, pharmacy,
right.
and then send them to the farm.
Right.
You know, but that's the that's always been the attitude of the Nigerian government towards agriculture.
Right.
Well, it's just a release valve for the excess capacity that we can't do anything with. Let's send them to the farm.
Right.
And, you know, it's almost made to feel like a punishment.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know what, we failed you. Are bad.
We can't think. Sorry.
But go and farm. And by the way, if you don't want to do it, you're lazy and you don't really want to work.
Mm.
You know, then.
And you're unpatriotic.
And then, but then when you think about it, you think about actually what farming means in Nigeria for most people.
Mm.
I mean, shout out to Tomato Joss
mm-hmm.
and shout out to a lot of these other like up and coming great, you know, agro-industrial setups.
Olusegun Obasanjo.
But most Nigerian farming is still backbreaking, inefficient, subsistence farming
mm-hmm.
with tools that are barely moved forward from the Stone Age.
Mm-hmm.
People are farming with, are clearing their land with machetes.
Mm-hmm.
People are planting by hand
mm-hmm.
and harvesting by hand.
Mm-hmm.
And that is very inefficient work.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't lift 100 million people out of poverty
mm.
when they are producing at a rate that even the Egyptians outpaced.
Yeah.
The ancient Egyptians, not the current ones. I mean like Ramses and them.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing better than this.
Mm-hmm.
And you think that that's what's going to lift 100 million people out of poverty. It just doesn't work that way. All you're going to end up doing is, well, these particular people are going to remain poor, but they won't starve. They will have 2 meals a day. Because that's all subsistence agriculture is going to give to people.
So that's what we're talking about on this episode of our podcast. Hopefully it doesn't run as long as our other podcasts, but we want to explore whether this idea that we can farm our way to prosperity can work, right? If it can, why hasn't it worked before? After all, like Andy said, he's been talking about this thing. Well, he's been hearing about this thing since he was 4 years old. And he's going to be 40 on the 30th. He's leaving 30 plus gang and joining 40 plus gang. How's your back? How's your back, Andy?
Aren't all birthdays suspended until the end of the pandemic?
No, unfortunately. No.
Huh.
But this is still a thing. But anyways, we've got government after government wanting to push agriculture, right? We've been talking about agriculture in one way or the other since independence. So, first question. Can agriculture adequately absorb the tens of millions of unemployed Nigerians? NBS, the Bureau of Statistics, they just released data, right?
Yes.
How many Nigerians on that list?
I think 21.7.
Yes. So can that number be
21.7 million? I mean.
Yes. Can that number, you know, be absorbed by agriculture?
No. I mean, like, okay, because even within that number,
mm.
you have even the number of currently employed Nigerians,
mm-hmm.
you have a lot of people in farming, in mm. agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
And most, and a lot of them, NBS is marking them as underemployed.
Yeah.
Because they're not working up to like the 20 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, agriculture in Nigeria, for as it is practiced in most places,
mm-hmm.
cannot gainfully employ a human being full time
mm.
and provide them with enough, you know, of an income,
mm.
right?
Mm.
So that's even for the people who are currently farming.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're saying you want to add more people
mm-hmm.
to that list.
To
like
that list,
agriculture is not, as it is in Nigeria,
mm-hmm.
it's not built to like absorb more people.
Mm.
And even if you did, even if you were able to like get all the like currently unemployed, like the, you know, 20 million unemployed people
mm-hmm.
and you send them back to the farm and mm-hmm. they agree to go back to the farm
mm-hmm.
and you go to the farm. I should stop saying back to the farm.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't there before.
Mm-hmm.
Send them to the farms and they're there. Most of them will be acutely underemployed.
Hmm.
They will still face the same productivity problem that the agriculture sector already faces.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just going to compound it. They're just going to make it worse.
Hmm.
And what you're going to end up happening is, oh, of course, in their own inefficient way,
mm-hmm.
they are still producing more food.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Now, all that simply does is, well, makes food, increases the supply of food. But the demand for food, like, those people can't even afford it. All they can afford is the one they're growing.
Is there something we could do to make it absorb the tens of millions of unemployed Nigerians? Is there something we could do to our agriculture to make it viable?
That's the question there is, because you've actually asked two questions, and I love that you asked the two questions together. One, okay, let me take them backwards. One, is there a way we can make our agriculture more viable? The answer is yes, and I'll get to that. Then the second question is there a way to make it absorb all those people? The problem, there's a no there, because the problem is, the more viable you make agriculture in this today's world, the fewer people it employs.
Oh, yes.
Because agriculture is all about efficiency, economies of scale.
Mechanizing.
And the mechanization and all those things increase the yield of a farmer. And makes a single farmer able to produce more food than he could before.
But when we're talking about agriculture, are we not talking also about the long supply chain, the entire ecosystem? We're not just talking about those who are in the farms. We're talking about those who get the produce into the markets, who store the produce, etc., etc.
Yes, of course. And the government always points that out when they are checked on the stupidity or the bogusness of their numbers for farming. They will say, hey, it's not just the farmers, it's all these other people. But then again, let's look at it critically. How many of those people are really needed? Like, how many people can the agriculture value chain really employ? Like, and I'm not saying that it's nobody, right? But I'm saying that even if you add the agriculture, we concede that the agricultural value chain is more than just farmers. Great, I agree. But even if you add every other person to the farmers, add the transport and logistics people, add the people who process the food, add the packagers and all of that. Even if you add all of them together, it still doesn't like fill the hole in our employment numbers. It really doesn't, you know. But that's always used by government as sort of a hand wave, you know. But then again, then the second point is, okay, fine, it's the rest of the value chain. What's your plan for the rest of the value chain, government? Like, what are you actually doing? That other value part of the value chain that you keep telling us is also there, and you roll your eyes at us and tell us, it's not just farmers, Karen. Okay, what are you doing for the non-farming agriculture professionals or non-farming agriculture and jobs? How are you creating them? How are you building the infrastructure that the that the logistics people need?
This is reminding me of a conversation I had with Mira. She's CEO at Tomato Joss.
Yeah.
And she was talking about how expensive it was to transport a lot of the tomato that they farm in Kaduna to the various parts of the country where processing is required, you know, because there are simply no roads, or there are simply too many people on those roads trying to extort the transporters who are trying to get their farm produce from one point to the next, right? So, so yeah, it's great to talk about, oh, we've got, you know, it's not just the farming, it's the infrastructure, it's the value chain, you know, but how conducive is it?
Yes, because I mean, if you think about it, okay, so you have transportation, you have preservation, so that's electricity.
Yes.
You have, you know, like you said, even like security, because security is a big problem right now. Then you have, you know, like, you know, when we just said the whole ease of doing business, you know, let government stay out of your way, you're not getting extorted on the roads. You have all these things that then, you know, and then when you talk about processing, you're already talking about industrialization. You're talking about, you know, energy for manufacturing. You have all those things, all those inputs that manufacturing needs. And manufacturing is struggling in Nigeria anyway. So how are you really going to have food processing as an industry when you have no back, you know, you don't have the backbone for manufacturing, for industrialization, which leads people like me to the to our own conclusion as well. Since agriculture relies on, and the agricultural value chain relies on industrialization anyway, and since industrialization will employ more people than agriculture, shouldn't industrialization be your focus as a government first, before you start talking about agric at this point?
Why do you think industrialization is never the focus?
It's harder. You know, it's harder. Like, government can easily tell you there's land in your village, go and farm. And that sounds to the average Nigerian like a good story.
Because as I was gonna say as you know, but you know, because well, you're my G, but the person who's listening probably doesn't know that I have a radio show. It's called Hard Facts, Nigeria Info 99.3. You can listen online. And all
and
the
they
time,
also have a podcast, a great podcast.
Yes, as well.
If you only have two podcasts, let it be this one and that one.
It's also called Hard Facts with Sandra Ezekwesili. So, and on that show, every time agriculture comes up, you have a lot of people lining up to tell you how the government is right, how people should go and farm, how agriculture is the future, how agriculture is the answer. And you always have them at war with the policy experts, with the agri-ec experts who are telling them, no, it's not the answer. No, it's not the future. So do you think there is a way to meet in the middle? Is there even a middle to meet in?
The middle is what we've been doing, which is where we have hard-hearted, half-hearted policies towards everything, with because the government knows that at the end of the day, enough Nigerians will agree with its story that they should go and farm, and then we have poverty.
Why are we more likely to agree with government's story that we should go and farm?
Because government, and when I say government here, by the way, I don't simply mean the current administration at any level. I don't just mean the current president or the current governance. I mean the general majority of people who have ruled this country. From independence till today.
Yeah.
They've not been skilled at running the country.
Yeah.
They've been very skilled at lowering the expectations of the people in the country.
Yeah.
And removing from their necks the responsibility and finding ways to tell the Nigerian people that actually you're the problem. So you're the problem. Look, there's land everywhere. We have so much land. It's very fertile land.
Arable.
Arable. And you're here complaining. Go and farm. You're lazy. You want to come to the city and enjoy. You know? That. And, you know, it gets to the point where you talk to some Nigerians, otherwise educated Nigerians, will actually argue with you and say, why are our people wanting luxuries in the city? Why do they want electricity? Why do they want to stay here? Why do they want to stay in an office job and in air conditioning when they can farm? And I'm like, excuse me, madam, do you want to go and farm?
You know, I could actually be a farmer. Like, my dream is to retire, own a ranch, have cows that I milk, have like a sheep dog that herds the sheep and, you know, cut their hair for wool that I go to sell. And I wear like big coveralls and rubber boots and a thatch hat with like a towel in my back pocket. And I'll have like ranch hands that I boss around and they'll call me the
Do
little
Do you want
fryer
to be one of the ranch
boss.
Hands?
Did I want to what?
Be one of the ranch hands?
No.
The life of the average Nigerian farmer is closer to your ranch hands than you, my dear retiree farmer. That's the problem. It's backbreaking work. There's one of these, one of the popes, I've forgotten which one now, and I can find out later, one of the medieval popes. His father was a farmer, and he always quipped, the pope always quipped that there were three ways to go to hell. Alcohol, drinking, womanizing, and farming, and his father chose the most painful one.
Well, of course, except you have like liver cirrhosis.
Farming is worse.
Says the man who doesn't have liver cirrhosis.
All has farmed. but you look at it, and it's just that idea that a lot of Nigerians have that yes, you can farm and go and farm. But you ask them a simple question: how many of those farmers you know in Nigeria farming traditionally have? I won't even say gotten rich. I'll say are currently able to send their children to get an education that gives them more options than farming. Because that should be the yardstick. The yardstick should be that you have a society that ensures that anybody who is willing to put in their share of work is able to get enough resources from their work to give their children more options than they had.
Yeah.
That is this. That is progress.
Yeah.
Now, how many Nigerian farmers are able to give their children an education that opens them to options that are more lucrative, let me say, than farming?
Mm.
That's the key. That's a litmus test. But we don't see that because, again, the average Nigerian, even the average Nigerian in the middle class, has come to accept poverty as something that we will not get rid of.
Yeah.
And something that
given.
Something that the poor should accept.
Yeah.
And that's why you feel okay.
The poor never being them, of course.
The poor never being them.
Mm-hmm.
The poor never being them.
Mm-hmm.
The poor could be their classmate, though.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you didn't get a job in the bank. Why don't you go and farm?
Mm-hmm.
You know? But we don't look at it that way. And when we talk about this thing as farming as the answer, it flies in the face of the last 300 years of history. You know, you look at people like the Dutch, right? The Dutch went from being like a backwater, that's the Holland, went from being a backwater in Europe to becoming like one of the big powerhouses, like in the 17th and 18th century. You know, we talk about the Dutch Golden Age. And they controlled commerce on the high seas, and they controlled like a lot of trade, and they basically like made themselves like one of the world's richest economy overnight. And in fact, they had the first like modern stock exchange was in Amsterdam.
Hmm.
And do you know the funny thing about that? When the Dutch were doing all that, this boom, do you know what their agricultural output was?
What?
Almost zero.
Hmm.
The Dutch were not producing food. And you ask yourself, well, how were they feeding? Well, they were doing trade with the Balkans. This is like Estonia and all of that.
We closed our borders.
Well, yeah, you know. Yeah, because why do you need to trade with the outside world when you have arable land?
Yes, and you can feed yourself.
You can feed yourself,
you grow all the food you need.
You want.
Mm-hmm.
But the Dutch were like, why should we break our backs to farm if there are people across the border or across the sea who are willing to farm and we can buy the food from them by trading with other places?
Keyword willing.
Yes. And we eat willing because it's what they wanted to do. And you make your big profits on trade, outside trade, take some, a percentage of that profit, and buy all the food you need. This idea that if you're not producing your own food, then you are somehow deficient is primitive.
It is.
It's the same way.
It's very unintelligent.
It's very unintelligent, but it's also very Nigerian. It's the same way Nigerians will argue with a couple and saying, why is your wife not cooking? Why is your wife not cleaning? Why are you hiring a house help?
Mm.
Why are you hiring a maid? Why do you have janitors in your house? Why do you have a chef?
Mm.
You must do it for yourself. You must break your own back.
No. You must suffer. Suffering as a virtue.
It's part of it. And it's really wrong-headed. Because the whole reason why you work hard
is to enjoy life.
And work, yes.
It's to jollof.
It's to jollof. And also, you make money doing one thing.
Mm.
To pay for something else.
That's right.
And so what you do is you place your labor, you know, your work as a, that's what you, you say, use what you have to get what you want.
That's right.
What you have is your labor force.
Mm-hmm.
So apply your labor force in the way that can make the most money.
Mm-hmm.
Then take that money and buy the other things that your labor force can't do.
Mm.
And food is one of those things.
Mm.
China is there importing soybeans.
China is always the example. They talk to you about how China closed her borders, and they forget the part where they did that, and China's economy tanked.
Yes, like you know, they talk about like you know when Chairman Mao took over, and oh, China closed his borders, and well, China triggered like mass farming and mass famines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, China actually like starved itself, and China receive sense, open borders, and all China's growth in the last like 50 years has come from a very pro-trade policy, open borders, and a de-emphasizing of agriculture.
So why do you think we keep going to the Chinese policies that made China suffer instead of the Chinese policies that gave China prosperity and growth?
Part of the problem is that Nigerian universities in the 60s, 50s, 60s, 70s, were infected by communism.
Oh, yes.
And I use that word,
infected?
Yes, I use it intentionally. What you had was our entire educated class, our thinkers, I don't want to call them intellectuals, I'll call them thinkers.
Mm-hmm.
Our thinkers were all seeded with this idea that, one, government intervention, to sort of like an agrarian-based, you know, state-controlled policy is like sort of the answer to growth, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And it was an idea that was implanted in them without any real evidence, mm-hmm, because it was still being tested.
Yes.
But now the thing is this, like, the Soviet Union is dead.
That's where I was going to go. That was in the 60s. Why are we still trying things that have failed?
Cram and poor. For those of you listening to us from outside of Nigeria, cram and poor is a slang for how sometimes Nigerians are made to learn things in school, where instead of like absorbing and learning the material and having an understanding of it, you're just made to like absorb all the data, like just have things memorized so that you can like pour them back out in the exam.
And, exactly,
and so you have these guys who, I mean, when you listen to some of these professors now and they're talking about these things, and you know, you listen to them on TV talking in the news,
I interview them,
you realize that they are not actually thinking about the things they're talking about.
Yeah.
And they're talking about things that was taught to them in 1968.
And when you have a younger person in the room talking about these things with them and has all these fresh ideas, new ideas, they're looking at you as, oh, these young chaps, too radical they are.
Yes. Like, they're like, you know, I mean, they've never, like, they don't even understand. So, yeah, but yeah, that's the problem. And these, our rulers have also been infected by that same bug because they were taught by these people. So
okay.
They,
But say that they are infected by this bug, right? And I mean, a lot of our leaders, I know you call them rulers, but I'm always very uncomfortable about calling them rulers.
They're not leading, they're ruling. I'm just being...
Anyway, Shao, a lot of our leaders are people who are from the 60s, you know? So there hasn't been a lot of fresh blood injected into the big offices. And even in the at the state level where there has been a lot of fresh blood being injected,
the fresh blood is worse. Like, the fresh blood is worse. The fresh blood was taught by the stale blood. You know, so the fresh blood is just coming to these things, and we don't really value empirical, you know, assessment of things and say, okay, what's working, what's really working in another place.
Okay.
And, you know, so.
So, but again, say that, fine, we've got the stale blood at the, I can't believe we're calling down, he's just stale blood and shit. But anyways, we've got stale blood at the helm of affairs. We've got fresh blood at the other at the state level of helm of affairs. And both groups of people are seeing that even subsistence farming is not popular. It's not as popular as it used to be. Not anymore. People are fleeing subsistence farming all over Nigeria, right? Because, like you mentioned, you know,
it leads to poverty.
Pretty much.
Yes.
So, how come we are not? Let me not say we, because we are seeing. How come the policymakers are not seeing what that says about the state of farming, and how come they are not taking a look at it and saying, okay, this is what should be done about agriculture?
Again, that comes down to like one of the fundamental pieces of dysfunction in Nigeria, which is that the policymakers are not being held to account for whether their policies work or not. So the policymakers, if people were upset enough about, you know, the level of poverty and unemployment, and they were like making life, you know, miserable for the policymakers, then the policymakers have an incentive to say, hey, you know what, we need to make this thing better. If people were, if the policymakers were coming up to say, oh, the answer is agriculture, everybody go back to the farm, and enough people were standing up to them and saying, no, that's rubbish, there's a reason why we've left the farms.
And we don't even have great soil anymore.
If enough people were ready to, like, push back when these inaccuracies were pushed as policy, and if government knows, hey, you know what, that agricultural lie doesn't work anymore, we need to come up with something different, then they would come up with something different. But the reason is, they tell us, oh, you know what, go back to the farm. And a lot of people will say, yeah, you know what, they are right, we're just being lazy. That's why. And so government gets away with it. And government will always do the bare minimum it can get away with. So there's no mystery there. There's really none.
Okay. All right. And then you now have, for a country that is saying, oh, agriculture is the answer, we also have that same country banning a lot of agricultural imports.
Yes, right? Because the reasoning on their side is, We can grow all these things ourselves, so why should we buy them from other people? So let's close the borders.
Inflation is currently at 13%. Mm-hmm. We've got food skyrocketing, food prices skyrocketing. Mm-hmm. I did a show one time about chickens having to feed twice a day now.
Or less.
Instead of three times a day like they used to, because chicken feed is so expensive these days, right?
I was listening to that show.
So it's making me wonder. And all of these things, by the way, all of the agricultural produce and food is what Nigerians have to eat to be able to stay able-bodied. Right?
That's right.
Because don't forget that, you know, the reason we should go to the farms is because we're so able-bodied. So for how long are we going to remain able-bodied if they keep restricting the protein that we take?
Yeah, because now chickens aren't growing. Chickens aren't giving us eggs. They are banning milk. They want to ban milk imports. Mm-hmm.
Most of us are intolerant to lactose.
Not most, just a few. You.
You must always drag me.
Of course.
Everything is an opportunity to drag me.
Isn't it though?
Okay. If you're listening to this podcast and you're lactose intolerant, please leave us a tweet or leave us a comment in the podcast's comment section.
Yes, leave us a tweet, leave us a comment, and leave milk alone. People will say, oh, I lost a turn. We're eating, drinking ice cream. You're doing yourself. Anyway. Yeah, so, you know, it's clearly wrong-headed. Because what you have is a situation where government is saying, we should be able to produce all these things, so we're going to ban imports of them until we do.
Mm.
And it just doesn't work that way. Because, again, this comes down to, like, not respecting market forces or not believing in them.
Mm.
You know, because...
And we have shown quite a penchant for not believing in
market forces. We don't believe in the market. And, it doesn't matter if you believe in the market. If you don't believe in the market believes in you.
Mm.
And the market will treat you the way it wants to treat you. You know, so, like, you know, you...
We should do an episode sometime, how economics works.
It works.
Nigeria.
Don't say it doesn't.
But doesn't.
No, it, you know, don't say it doesn't. Because Nigerians are always saying that the rules, the laws of economics don't work here. But they work here, and that's why we are in the situation we're in.
Mm.
The reason we're in the way we're in is because...
We don't pay attention to the laws of economics. Yeah,
exactly. It's like, you know, you're going to go and play a game.
Yeah.
And you don't know the rules.
You ignore the rules of the game.
And then you're like, hey, you keep winning me in this game.
They keep
like
whooping my ass.
It's like the rules don't apply here. There's like, there's no chess rules don't apply in this chess board.
It's like Andy living in bondage. You not call Atara me for Ofuma.
That's right. That means explain this well to me.
Explain this thing well to me. So Andy's a character in a classic Nollywood movie that went to join a secret cult for money. Because, you know, that's part of our myth here. It's part of our mythology in Nigeria that you can join a cult and do blood sacrifices and have people vomiting money from your wardrobe or from under your bed or from a secret room. So anyways, he goes to join this cult because, you know, he joined bad gang. And this is for our non-Nigerian listeners. Now, he went and joined bad gang and, you know, bad gang had money. Everybody was flossing, everybody was flexing, you know. And then he joined the gang and they told him, yo, if you want to flex the way we flexing, we could take you where we went to get the money to flex. And so he went there with them to one of their ritual meetings, and they told him to bring his wife for the ritual. And that's the point where he said, you couldn't explain this thing to me well. So yeah, it's a running joke between Andy and myself every time we get into like unforeseen circumstances.
Oh no, foreseeable and foreseen circumstances. Well, if it isn't the consequences of my actions.
But Andy, these problems, these challenges that Nigeria has with its agri-tech sector, they're not insurmountable. Yes, we have a terrible security problem at the moment. Yes, the infrastructure isn't there. Yes, the value chain or value chain coordination aren't there at the moment. But there has to be systemic ways of addressing the problem of which kinds of agricultural value chain should we focus on, right? So, I mean, there has to be answers to questions like, what's the potential for value addition? There has to be answers for questions like, what's the potential for job creation? You know, what's the potential for quality of jobs created? If you were advising the government, pretend that Buhari listens to this podcast, what would your counsel be?
My counsel would be, first of all, Mr. President, you're asking the wrong question if you think agriculture is the answer.
Hmm.
Agriculture is not the answer.
Okay.
Stop it. That's my first piece of advice. My second piece of advice is, Mr. President, when you think that your resource, your main resource is the able-bodied Nigerians, you're wrong. Your main resource is able-minded Nigerians. As long as you think we are going to muscle our way out of poverty, then your policy is 200 years late. We are not going to muscle ourselves out of poverty. We're going to think ourselves out of poverty. We're going to brain ourselves out of poverty.
Speak it!
Ooh. And so we have to start thinking about...
Aspire to perspire to perspire.
For a small donation.
Please focus.
Yeah, so you have to look at things that way. The problem is we keep making agriculture, and I say we, I mean the government, keeps making agriculture the priority of its policies. And that's wrong. Like, it's wrong because agriculture, there is a limit to what agriculture can give us in terms of productivity, in terms of employment, in terms of revenue. So we have to put agriculture in its rightful place. The problem isn't with agriculture. The problem is that we're expecting too much from it. So you have to start looking at the other things. Like I talked about manufacturing and industrialization. But we have to also talk about the knowledge economy, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, who are the big boys in Nigeria these days increasingly? You know, big boys and girls. Yeah, the tech people, you know, the
tech thesis.
The developers, you know, why they're making money. Why? Because they're plugged into the global economy. They're getting jobs, offshore jobs, you know, writing software for companies outside of Africa.
Which is probably why they're coming for y'all with the certification verification spells.
They're not coming for them. The whole world is coming for everybody. It's a global thing. So yeah, but yeah, they are making that money. And why are they making that money? Because they have skills that are globally in demand. Knowledge-based skills. You know, and that's the world we live in now with the internet. There are ways to make money for there are ways to create jobs that plug Nigerians into the global economy in ways that are far more efficient, far more promising than agriculture. Because guess what? Agriculture is a losing game, by the way, Sandra. Like, the real money in agriculture is in exports. Right? So you have to ask yourself, and to make money in an export, you have to provide some sort of comparative advantage. So let's say rice.
Thailand has that on lockdown.
You know, so
cassava.
Yeah, cassava is the only maize. Is one of the even maize. Even with maize, maize is one of our biggest products, agricultural products. But the thing with maize is we produce it very inefficiently. I wish Sarati was on this podcast with us. She talks a lot about that and about how, like, our maize production, like, because of all the input, like, we have issues with maize. So we're not producing maize as efficiently as we can. And so that also affects the prices of maize. You know, so, you know, and for most of, and the biggest consumers of maize these days are the industrial producers, industrial consumers, sorry. So people like the, like, we talk about chicken feed creators or the breweries who need it for beer and stuff like that. So we're not even though we're producing a lot of it, we're not producing a lot of it efficiently.
Saratu, by the way, is the comms person for Oxfam in Nigeria. Saratu Abiola, that is. Shout out to you, Saratu girl.
Yeah. So you know, you're not producing those things efficiently. Cassava, yes. What we should be thinking about with something like cassava is, well, how do we market cassava to the rest of the world? But for most of these other crops, we can't compete in the world with them. We just can't. So when you can't compete on something, stop producing it.
But manufacturing doesn't look like the way forward in the next decade or two. Because we need to do...
Well, like, that's why I told you about the knowledge-based economy. Like, we talked about... like, I used one example, software development.
Is the knowledge-based economy enough to lift 100 million Nigerians out of poverty?
Well, maybe we should first of all, like, adjust our expectation and understand that we do not have the capacity to lift 100 million Nigerians out of poverty in 10 years. We've simply not done the work in the last 50 years to do that. So let's, like... Let's stop making the perfect the enemy of the good. Let us recalibrate our expectations. There's no miracle. We blew it. Right? We blew it. When we had oil surpluses and all these other things and all these years of work, we blew it. So if we want to lift 100 million people out of poverty, we need a 50-year plan, a 60-year plan for that. So leave that aside. And definitely, even if that was the plan... Agriculture is less able to do that than the knowledge-based economy or manufacturing. So why are we going to the worst possible option for it? So
back to what you said, it's the easiest one.
Yeah, it's the easiest one to sell.
Yeah.
And it's the one that requires the least work from government.
From government, yeah.
You know, in its current state.
It's the one that says, see, you're the reason Nigeria isn't moving forward.
Exactly.
You lazy youth.
Exactly. It's the one that doesn't require them to, like, give us all electricity. Mm. It's the one that doesn't require them for...
But that's even very myopic, because agriculture today requires electricity.
Yes, but you're not thinking... Because, like I said before, the president is not thinking about agriculture today. Mm. He's thinking about agriculture 200 years ago. Mm. He's thinking about hoes and machetes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's some hoes in that farm. There's some hoes on the farm. There's some hoes on the farm.
Products.
Wet agricultural products. Well,
that works.
Yeah, irrigation. Irrigation.
Ooh. Pack that Big Mac truck. Lighten this. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Jesus. Oh, God.
Park that big tractor right in my little farm, I guess. That
okay,
now,
this
I apologize.
Podcast is going left.
I apologize.
It is going left.
And I cancel myself. Okay, yeah. So, yeah. I mean, yeah. So agriculture is out of it,
mm-hmm,
as a leader.
Mm-hmm.
And the 100 million out of poverty is also out of it.
Yeah.
Let's not let that distract us.
Yeah.
Let's set a smaller goal. And a smarter goal and have smarter strategies for it.
Do we have the right people in government at the moment, the right drivers for this strategy to work? No.
It's not about the people in government. It's about the systems that put people there and perpetuate them there.
Mm.
You could have the right person or the wrong person do the right thing or the wrong thing.
Mm.
People in government only do as much as they're able to get away with.
Mm.
That's just as simple as that.
It reminds me of the podcast where we talked about how elections work in Nigeria.
But don't.
Yeah, so if you haven't listened to that episode, by the way, you should listen. It was one of our first episodes on this podcast. But I do think we've covered all the ground.
Yeah.
On this subject. I do think that by now you're coming away with this, with what the fundamental problems are. You're coming away from this podcast with all the reasons why we keep coming back here. You are also coming away from this podcast with solutions to the problem. And you're also coming away from this podcast realizing how able-bodiedness works.
But doesn't.
We're going to bring you a new episode, hopefully very soon. But go ahead and follow us on social media, How Nigeria Works.
But doesn't.
I'm S. Ezekwesili on Twitter.
Android O everywhere.
That's where I'm most active. That's why I'm sharing that. But if you want to follow me on Instagram, that's also fine. S. Ezekwesili. So until our next episode, bye.
Bye.